Well, I think when we get out there, we can think that the only thing that matters is score. You know, there's not many people say to me that the only reason they play golf is to score. There might be people like that, and that's absolutely fine. It's everybody's personal reasons. But if you go out there and your reason is to be connected to nature or the companionship or whatever, and you get out there, and as I say, you take double up the first, and then you sulk for the next 4.5 hours, you've forgotten your reasons for playing. Golf is meant to be chaotic. It's not meant to follow a straight line.
Golf Smarter number 719 is brought to you by ExpressVPN, an absolute must for every sports fan. Visit expressvpn.com/golfsmarter and get 3 extra months for free. That's expressvpn.com/golfsmarter. The return of Carl Morris, co-author of his latest book, The Lost Art of Playing Golf.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Carl.
It's good to be back with you, Fred. Really enjoyed it the last time.
Yeah, and we got some great feedback, too.
Really?
It was really nice. Yeah, we've got some people who really are like, okay, that stuff makes sense.
They started to hole a few putts afterwards, hopefully.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's something I need to talk about.
Okay.
But we're talking about the new book. So yeah. What we're referring to is the last book that you co-authored with Gary Nickel, which who we just talked to a few weeks ago. And that was The Lost Art of Putting. And now we're talking about The Lost Art of Playing Golf. Correct. And so interesting book, interesting approach. But you guys have a very different approach to this. It's an interesting combination of flavors putting you two together.
I think the really interesting thing we've been finding, Fred, for people who read the first putting book, he said it's probably the first golf instruction book where they've not received any instruction in the sense that we don't tell you how to do stuff. You know, we don't tell you how to grip it, we don't tell you how to stand, we don't tell you how to do all the things that most of the other books tell you, and we're not ignoring fundamentals, we're not ignoring mechanics at all, but we believe that there's a different way to get closer to what you as a unique individual need to do to sort of unmask the golf that's in there, rather than us telling you how we think you should look based on a model that's in our mind.
Well, that's the part that I'm struggling with in my putting right now is my head. Mm. I don't need someone to tell me how to get it to the hole. I'm doing that fine, except when I'm within 3 or 4 feet.
Right.
And it's like, how can I not get this right? Why am I missing these short putts?
And usually what you find when you get close to the hole, Fred, there's all kinds of stories start to emerge like that, you know, questions. Why am I not doing this? Why am I not holding it? And, you know, one of the basic premises of both books really is that, you know, if you're going to get better at golf, it really is down to one word, and that is attention. And what do you place your attention on to get the task done? And, you know, I know we're talking about the putting book again, but I think one really interesting exercise that we've had some good success with short putts, I don't know whether you've tried it, is on the shorter ones, when you actually look at the golf ball, after the golf ball has left the putter, you actually get to see what was called an after image, a blurred image of where the golf ball used to be. And, you know, we often say to people, if you see the after image, it doesn't mean to say that you'll hole a short putt, but it'll certainly increase your chances. And all of a sudden, the goal changes, because very often, I think what happens with short putts, we come across that awful word called should.
Mm-hmm.
I should hold this putt.
And the woulda, shoulda, coulda.
The woulda, yeah. Shoulda, coulda, yeah. And you know, that's a very dangerous word, because, you know, all the statistics tell us even the best players in the world miss a bunch of putts, even up to close range. But I think if the goal becomes, can I see the after image, then all of a sudden your attention is elsewhere. And then, you know, the short putts can be allowed to go in, rather than creating a bunch of stories of what you think you should do and putting your attention in a place that's maybe not giving you the best chance of success. Another interesting one just on that, but I think from short range, I think it's worth exploring. It makes a lot of sense to me that Jordan Spieth has done it for a long time. He's actually looking at the hole. You know, we've had some interesting stuff over the last few years about people who've really struggled with the yips. And guess what? I would say over 95%, if you get yippers to actually look at the hole instead of the ball, there's much less evidence, or there's much less occurrence of yippiness in the stroke, because your brain isn't anticipating an impact condition. You tend to react much more to the target.
Mm-hmm. Well, like when many other sports, when you're not looking at the ball, you're looking at your target.
Pretty much every other sport, that's what you're doing. You know, you're looking at the hoop, yeah. you're looking at the goal, you're looking at the pocket in pool or snooker or whatever, and then we've got this damn game where you're looking at the ball.
Makes no sense sometimes. Yeah. No, I actually do look at the hole when I'm doing my practice swings for my putt to try to get a sense of what I'm, you know, going after. And I saw a tip the other day about the short putts. The person was saying, just pretend there's a marker on the other side of the hole and don't even think about the hole. Just get it to your spot, or find a spot and try to get it to that spot. Didn't work for me yesterday.
Right. don't judge everything on yesterday, Fred. It's good.
Well, you know what? And I really can't. And here's why. Because I played TPC Harding Park yesterday, which is preparing for a major. Right. Now, this is a course where the slope where we played was a 122. But I'm sorry, it was not a 122. It was a 138. Really? I mean, they've narrowed the fairways on this course, and the rough is just coming up. And it was over a 4.5 hour round, because the amount of time we were spending looking for the balls in the rough, that was not that far off the fairway.
It was a tough exam paper, was it?
Oh man, and it's the highest score that I've shot in over 12 months. I mean, right. 363 days ago was my highest score over the last year, and this was two strokes higher than that. So it's, and I just got to keep telling myself, hey, this is a course where the pros are going to be playing a major. Of course you suck on it.
Tell yourself a different story.
Got to come up with something else, because my performance, I mean, I'm hitting the fairways, I'm just, but everything else. Yeah. Man, yeah. It was tough. But dealing with adversity, and let's get into the new book, The Lost Art of Playing Golf. Dealing with adversity is part one of the topics that comes across there. Yeah. And I have a feeling that was your topic.
Yeah, it was. I think, you know, I would have said at one time that probably the most important part of the routine, everybody talks about pre-shot routine. And I would have said at one time, Fred, that for top-class players, probably the most important part of the routine is the post-shot, is the way that you actually react to what's just happened. I'd now change that and say it's important for everybody. And it's an area that very few golfers actually look at. You know, we spend so much time analyzing the golf swing, which is fine. We maybe spend a little bit of time on working on the input before the shot. But if you look back through a lot of rounds that you'll have played, you, everybody, all of your listeners, I will guarantee that there'll be a lot of shots that you've hit on the golf course that you've hit bad shots as a result of the way that you reacted to previous shots. So that you get what I call contamination, that you get the shot that you're playing now is contaminated by previous shots because of the way that you reacted to it. And I think, you know, if you went back, for the guys and the ladies listening, if you went back over some of the previous rounds that you've played, just have a think back to how you've reacted to some of the shots that you've played, and actually think, well, did that serve you well? Was that useful to you? And then to maybe look at a different approach next time you play. That one of the mantras that we've had for even tour players in particular is it seemed almost a bit negative, really, but we find it's quite liberating for people. Is expect nothing, deal with everything. Because
very good.
Expect nothing, deal with everything. Because I think we all fall into the trap, the expectation trap. I played well yesterday, so I'm going to play well tomorrow. Or I played bad yesterday, so I'm going to play bad tomorrow. But if there's one thing that this game has taught me in over 35 years of coaching, is that what happened yesterday is no predictor of what's going to happen tomorrow. Zero. Not zero, but pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah. History is irrelevant to that. That's that hole. Especially when people are like, you know, every time I come to this hole, I hit it in the water. We're going to do something different.
You know, what we talk about a lot in the book is that, you know, the holy grail of golf supposedly is consistency. Well, you tell me a player that's ever been consistent. You know, we've got a graphic in the book of Brooks Koepka, you know, world number one, and the variation between his his best and worst rounds on tour. It's something like 16 shots, you know. You wouldn't expect good players to vary so much, but my goodness, they do. So why do you know, club players, why do guys who play once a week expect that the consistency is going to be there? But instead of consistency, if we champion the idea of adaptability, what about if adaptability was the holy grail? That you worked on the idea that whatever I've got today, could I actually adapt what I've got today to get the ball round? It might be a bit ugly at times and it might not feel great at times, but we're convinced that the skill of adaptability is a really interesting one to look at.
I can't tell you how many times where I'll finish a round with somebody and go, God, I just wish I was more consistent. And I look at the scorecard and went, you just shot a 45-45. You're very consistent. Oh, gee, yeah, I guess I am. No, I just want to have my shots consistent. Hey, you're playing bogey golf, 45-45, so you're like one over on every hole. Why? Yeah, but I doubled and I... No. You're consistent.
Yeah. You know, and I think the other thing as well, really exciting to look at this, is the idea that on any given day, you may not have your swing in the sense that it might not feel great, but we honestly believe that everybody can have a certain shot. If you're asking the question, what's wrong with my swing, you can disappear down a rabbit hole. But pretty much every day that you play, you'll have certain shots that you can play. But the big skill in this game is, if let's say you warm up and the only shot that you've got today is a 10-yard fade, but then you get out on the golf course and you look at a hole and you think, oh, it's perfect for a draw here. I need to draw it around the trees. And you start making draw decisions on fade days. That's where most people go wrong.
Interesting. Wow, draw decisions on a fade day. Absolutely. Wow, that's powerful.
It is powerful. And, you know, one of the guys that came on my podcast recently, I used to work with when he played on the European Tour, Paul McGinley, you know, he said that he'd look back on his career and every single day he said, I didn't really know until I got to the range warming up whether it was going to favor fade or draw today. He said, I look back and I wished I'd been more adaptable to that. Instead of trying to force certain shapes, you know, there were days when he had all the shots, the days when he could draw it, fade it, hit it straight. But he said he wished he'd look back, and if there was a definite sense that today was going to be a fade day, let's go with that and let's make some fade decisions rather than trying to pull off a shot that just isn't with you today.
Well, we're going to fade to black for just a moment, take a quick time out, and then we'll come back because I want to ask you about your podcast. This episode of Golf Smarter is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Now, you know, sports packages on cable can cost a frickin' fortune. And many times they don't even show all the games you want to see. That's why having ExpressVPN is an absolute must for any sports fan. ExpressVPN has helped me save hundreds of dollars on sports subscriptions. They also let me stream all the games I want with no restrictions. And here's how it works. ExpressVPN tricks the sites into thinking that you're located somewhere else in the world. This lets you watch games that are blacked out in your region and buy sports subscriptions that cost less in other countries. You can use ExpressVPN to stream all sports. NBA, NFL, English Premier League, you name it. As a matter of fact, last weekend I was down in Southern California and I wanted to watch the 49ers and Saints football game, but they were broadcasting the LA Chargers game. I had no interest in that at all. So I went over to my iPad and I pulled up my local cable channel, my app for my cable channel. And because of ExpressVPN, it thought I was in Northern California. So I got to watch an amazing football game and a great win by the Niners. ExpressVPN is so easy to use. You just fire up the app, pick a location you want to appear from, and hit connect. ExpressVPN is incredibly fast and works on all your devices, even your smart TV, so you can stream sports in HD from anywhere. Even when I'm not watching sports, I always have ExpressVPN running on my devices 24/7 because it encrypts my data and keeps it safe from hackers and prying eyes. So while I'm traveling, if I'm over at a Starbucks or a Pete's Coffee or someplace like that, I don't want to use their free Wi-Fi because someone else is going to be checking out what I'm doing on my machine. But ExpressVPN blocks that. Save money and watch all the games you want with the best VPN for streaming sports. Visit expressvpn.com/golfsmarter today to get 3 extra months for free. That's expressvpn.com/golfsmarter to learn more. Carl, you have a podcast. How long have you been doing your podcast?
Relative newbie, I suppose, in terms of, you know, guys like yourself, Fred, who've been at it a while. I've been probably about 2 years, I think, now, just over two years.
That's good.
Yeah. And it's an interesting discipline, isn't it, to keep doing it, because it's like a lot of things. I think people say, oh, yeah, I'll start a podcast. But to actually stick with it and stay with it and keep asking people on your show and keep getting the guests and keep writing the notes and all the rest of it, it does take a bunch of discipline, doesn't it?
And your time. Not just discipline, it takes your time.
Yeah.
And I tell you, since we're talking about fears and overreacting to things, I'm the type of person that once I get into a rhythm of something, I'm afraid that if I stop it, I won't get back. Mm. And that's probably why I'm up to episode 717 or something. I'm too scared to stop.
I've not even got to three figures yet. So you're.
Yeah.
I mean,
every week since 2005, I think I've missed 3 weeks in all that time. But luckily now I can schedule in advance. So if I'm traveling, I can get these shows done in advance and stuff. But it's something every time. And honestly, every time I think I'm going to stop doing this, I get an email from somebody that says, oh my God, you've saved my game. It's like, oh, thanks. That's not what I wanted to hear right now.
I think the other great thing about doing the podcast is you build up a community of like-minded people, don't you? And you know, some of the people that I've had on the Brain Booster are just great just to share time with them and share ideas. And, you know, people are by and large pretty open to sort of trying to help others, really. And it's a good community to be part of.
Oh, absolutely. Communities of passion is what I like to say about podcasts. But it's also, for me, it's advanced education. It's continuing education. I've learned so much about the game and about myself doing this show and talking to people about this. What's the name of your show?
It's called The Brain Booster.
And what's the premise of it?
It's all about performance. It's the idea of how to better use attention, focus, primarily in golf. But we've had people on the show from other sports. You know, that strange sport called cricket that we had the former England captain on that I used to work with years ago, and rugby and football. So it's primarily golf, and we've had a lot of really good golf coaches on there. But the whole idea is how can you as an individual take some information, personalize it to get better.
Awesome. Well, good luck with that. I hope it goes well, and that you're able to stay with it.
Well, I'm quite pleased to have got to 2 years, but I've got 700 in mind. That's a long way away.
It's a long way away. It is. It always blows my mind when I'm getting up to another 00 episode. It's like, really? Yeah. Yeah, but that's every 2 years the way I've been doing it. One of the things that came across to me in the book that I just love how you present it, and I'm just going to let you do it, is the value of the most important question to ask for a golfer and for a golf student.
Yeah, is why do you play golf? Which, you know, sounds such an obvious question, but I think an awful lot of us, I look back on my early years and I probably ended up playing a game very much for other people, and I lost sight of the real essence of why I played golf in the first place. And when you ask yourself that question and get a little bit deep on it, why do you play golf? And don't necessarily take the first answer that comes up. You know, write the first, second, and third reason why you play golf. But then once you've done that, Fred, I think the most important thing. It was a guy called Vin Harris who is basically a Buddhist teacher. And he came out, he said something really profound. He said that it's okay to ask the question, why do you play golf? But it's then very important to think about why you play golf when you play golf.
As, you mean as you're playing golf?
As you're playing golf. You know, think about why you play golf when you play golf. Because, you know, we can come out with these reasons. Oh, I love the social side of it and I love the challenge and all the rest of it. And then when it gets a bit difficult because you've double bogeyed the first, you can very easily lose sight of those reasons of why you're actually playing the game. You know, so I've had some players answer those questions and then, you know, just put a couple of notes in the yardage chart or, you know, in your notes that you take out there. And when things are getting challenging, just stay connected to the real reasons why you play when you're actually playing.
What are the various reasons you've heard people say of why they play golf?
There's a consistent theme of companionship. There's a consistent theme of being out in nature. There's a consistent theme of trying to become the best player that they can be. Consistent theme of liking the competition. There's not that many that come back, but I think when people really resonate with their reasons, then they start playing a more genuine game. You know, and here's the ironic thing is, you know, if the social side of it is very important to you, and that's something that connects deep within you, and that you go out and you make the best efforts to actually enjoy the social side of the game within whatever constraints there may be on a given day, actually, because you are connecting back to why you play, you're creating probably the best conditions to allow a score to emerge. Because you were in a good state yourself to play the game. That state, you're not waiting for the golf ball to make you feel good, but actually because you're connected to your reason to play, I call it going first. You go first before the ball. You feel good because you're actually out there playing golf and you're connected to that, those social reasons perhaps. But because of that, you are creating the best conditions to allow your best performance to emerge.
So what kind of frustrations arise that take you away from reminding you why you're playing?
Well, I think when we get out there, we can think that the only thing that matters is score. You know, there's not many people say to me that the only reason they play golf is to score. There might be people like that, and that's absolutely fine. It's everybody's personal reasons. But if you go out there and you really your reason is to be connected to nature or, you know, the companionship or whatever, and you get out there and, as I say, you take double up the first and then you sulk for the next 4.5 hours, you've forgotten your reasons for playing. You know, golf is meant to be chaotic. It's not meant to follow a straight line. And I think we perhaps don't embrace that enough.
I need you to keep going with that idea. Golf is meant to be chaotic?
Absolutely. But, you know, again, back to this consistency idea. There was a great passage, I think it was in the Inner Game of Golf many years ago, this idea of consistency. And just imagine if every time that you went out and played golf, you just shot, you know, you shot 76, 76, 76, 76, 76. Well, it sounds wonderful, but actually, and we'd give it a try for a while. But actually, when you think of it, if you did that long term, it would be incredibly boring.
You wouldn't keep going. No question. You would not keep going back.
Keep going because, you know, one of the reasons that we do come back is because we've had a challenging day and we think, okay, I'm going to do something about this. And you go and work on your game. And that's the real pleasure then that you've pulled yourself out of a slump. You've dealt with some of the things that's been happening in your game. And I think the more we can, I think it was Fred Shoemaker who said to me that he has a mastery group. And I know you've had Fred on your show. Fred has a mastery group, and I think they've been meeting. These guys have been meeting every couple of months for about 10 years. And he said one of his students, he said after a few years, he said he came to me. He said, "Fred, he said, I'm finally okay with the uncertainty."
Mm.
And I thought that was maybe it shouldn't take that many years for it to get to that. But you can see that, you know, these are intelligent people, and it does take a while to just actually get to that point where you embrace that uncertainty and you embrace the fact that, back to what I said before, expect nothing, deal with everything.
Yep. Yeah, it's, you know, if for me, it's like, look, any given day, 10 strokes one way or the other. Mm. You know, it just, that's what the game is. like I said the other day, yesterday when I played Harding Park, at TPC Harding Park, I shot a 93. 3 days before, I shot a 78.
Well, here's the interesting game. Here's the interesting thing with that, Fred, just to sort of go on a sort of slightly different route. I was out in London at the weekend, a couple of weekends ago, and it was a course more about training and how the body works. And one of the guys there who's and this company that does this sort of training for the keeping the body mobile, and he made a very relevant point to golf, because he said that this idea of dynamic systems theory is that he said you could have a guy who is going to squat a bar, you know, it may be an expert in the squat. And he said you would think that every single squat that the expert would do would be exactly the same. He said, but they understand that they've tested this, that even the expert, every single squat that the expert does is slightly different. You know, one time that the glutes fire first or the hamstrings fire first. There's no program in the brain for this thing called the squat, that your body organizes movement based on an intention to squat, but it's slightly different every time. Now, then you look at the golf swing, it's exactly the same thing. You know, we've got an intention to move a ball from A to B. The actual way that your body creates that motion, even for expert players, is slightly different every time, because the brain organizes that way. It doesn't organize the motor program called golf swing and just replicates it like a robot. We're not built that way. We're built for adaptability and flexibility, not consistency. So I think the more science is telling us these things, and the more we can embrace that, it sounds crazy to embrace uncertainty, but I think unless you're prepared to do that, you're in for a lot of disappointing days.
Yes, indeed. I received an email the other day from a listener that tossed across to me a concept that has never crossed my mind. And I was like, okay, I'm going to hold this for the right person. And you're the person. And we're going to read that letter, that email, and have you respond to it right after this.
It's a hard part for me.
Say again?
This could be a tough one for me. This could be like playing hard in part. It's a question.
I won't be right back. Carl, I received this email from Lamar Kersey. I'm going to not read the whole thing, but he's suggesting a topic. And he says, do you think there is any link between being confident to spine angle and posture? Think about it. When we're confident, we always play better. We also unconsciously stand up a little straighter and push our chest out just a hair. When we're not confident, we tend to slouch a little, roll our shoulders forward, and put our weight a little bit more over our toes when we walk. Any research done on this, do you think? What do you think about that? I'm like, wow, what a concept. I love that idea.
I'm like, you had never thought about it like that. But having said that, what I would say to your listener, Lamar, did you say it was?
Lamar, yeah. And everybody who's listening is going, oh my gosh, I've never thought of that.
Pursue that line of thought and have a look at the work of Amy Cuddy. Cuddy, who wrote a book called Presence, and she's got a TED talk on YouTube, and she's spent a lot of time researching the effects of body language, the link between mind and body, and basically she talks about power poses, about, you know, if you imagine the Superman pose and things like that, if you put yourself in powerful postures, there are basically different chemicals going through your system, that there's an increase in testosterone with good posture and a decrease in cortisol. When the body drops and it slumps, we increase cortisol, which is the stress hormone. So the kind of circuitous link to that, it would be an interesting area of sort of research, that if you are feeling confident and you are consciously aware of your posture in between shots, might that help you set up better for your actual shots? It's certainly worth looking at. I've over the years, one of the really, really simple but successful ideas that we've had with players who continually beat themselves up in between shots, I'll say to them, when you're walking in between shots, where are your eyes? And they'll think for a moment, well, obviously your eyes are down. Well, what do people always say when they're miserable? Well, things are looking down. I'm feeling a bit down. Yeah, what do people say when they're feeling happier? Things are looking up. I'll tell you what, it's a bright future. So we've done a lot with people that just be aware of the position of your eyes as you're walking in between shots. Do you habitually allow your eyes to go down and your posture drops? Or very simply, what you could do is just have the intention next time that you play that you keep your eyes above the flag. As you're walking in between shots, keep your eyes above the flag line. And that will at least keep your eyes horizontal. It stops your body language from dropping, but it stops a lot of the internal dialogue as well.
And that's, of course, if you know where your ball is, and when I'm playing the rough at Harding Park,
you can instruct him or her to find the ball for you.
Yeah, right. That my eyes are down because I'm trying to find the ball in the rough.
Yeah, you are allowed to look for the ball, but yeah, it's an interesting one. The whole body language, posture element.
Yeah,
it's certainly worth exploring. Absolutely.
Well, what is your gut reaction to that? I mean, how do you respond? Do you think there's validity to that?
Certainly, I've got no research to back it up, but I think there's certainly validity in it. Makes one of those things that instinctively think, oh, I hadn't thought about it like that before, but it makes an awful lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, if you get somebody on your podcast that can answer that question, that you maybe you'll bring it up, let me know and I'll get them on.
I'll search for that person.
Yeah. Oh, man. So again, the book is called The Lost Art of Playing Golf by Carl Morris and Gary Nicole, and is a follow-up to the great book, The Lost Art of Putting. And of course, your podcast as well. People should check that one out. Thank you so much for giving me your time. Best of luck with this book. I think it's great, and it's a good read.
It's my pleasure, Fred. It's great to chat with you again, and as you say, like-minded questions and community.
Hey, Miles Dowsett, you're in Buntingford, England, right? Congratulations. Miles, you're the winner of our online session to cure the yips, phobias, PTSD, anxiety, whatever, with our last guest, James Heimers. James is in Windsor, you're in Buntingford, and both are on the outskirts of London, so maybe you two can even meet in person. Either way, I'll email you two to be in touch, and you can work out the details. Congratulations, and thanks so much for participating, Miles. You know, we only have one prize left in 2019, and it's one of our favorites. Now, if I had to guess what would be on the top of your holiday shopping list to put in your bag, I can imagine that a new putter would be close to the top, right? Well, if not on the top of your list. Well, we're giving away a brand new customized Seymour putter courtesy of Jim and Cody at Seymour.com, and it could be yours. The winner will be announced on our Christmas Eve episode, so enter now. You have a couple weeks if you're starting to listen right now, today, whatever day you're listening to. How can I tell you how long it's going to be, because I don't know when you're listening. But when I'm recording this, we've got 2 weeks for you to enter. Deadline to enter is Sunday, December 22nd, 2019, midnight Pacific time, 3 a.m. Eastern. So if you're listening and it's getting close to that, you better enter right now because you'll get distracted. Just go ahead and enter. Go to golfsmarter.com and click on the giveaway banner at the top of the homepage. Can I give you a little tip about winning? I know, as a podcast listener, I don't always respond to these giveaways, and I'm sure that you let them slide by too, but you'd be absolutely amazed at how good your chances are of winning. So make sure you enter, because a Seymour putter is one of those gifts that will live in your bag for a long, long time. Now, if you listen to episode 717 a couple weeks ago featuring Lynn Marriott and liked what she had to say, then don't miss this week's episode of Golf Smarter Mulligans, brought to you by twoguyswithgolfballs.com and autoslash.com. I'm bringing back episode number 97, the original conversation with Lynn Marriott from October 2007. And then next week on Golf Smarter, we'll feature a new conversation with Lynn's partner and Annika Storenstam's lifelong golf coach, Pia Nilsson. Then my first conversation with Pia, on Golf Smarter Mulligans will be published that Friday. So you've got a lot of chances to listen to Lynn Marriott and Pia Nilsson from Vision 54. These women are brilliant. They're amazing coaches, tops in the world. And I really advise you to check them both out. That's going to be Golf Smarter Mulligans on this Friday and next Friday and then next week on Golf Smarter. Golf Smarter Mulligans is our free weekly podcast from the unavailable archives of Golf Smarter that only focuses on game improvement. Golf Smarter and Golf Smarter Mulligans are available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions on how to get my voice back, click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.